10-minute speaker. Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is Nathan S. from San Diego. Yeah.
Good evening. My name is Nathan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
Hey, Jess. My sobriety date is September 28th, 2018. My sponsor's name is Matt G., and his sponsor's name is Larry Jose. My home group is the 930 Every Nighters. It's just down the street here on Waring Road. And I'd like to thank my beautiful mother here who came to hear me speak. She suffered her alcoholic man-child for far too long. You know, my dear friends, Sean and Kyle here gave me a bit of advice before tonight. Sean says, well, man, it's a formal speaker meeting. You shouldn't curse. And that's hard for me. I have a very limited caveman vocabulary. And, you know, my home group, it's like graduate school for pirates, right? And there's times where I feel like I can't really convey my message without a good F-bomb, right? And I'm the type of guy, I'll use an F-bomb as a noun, a verb, an adjective, a pronoun, an adverb. They just work every time, right? And then Kyle here, he says, well, man, if you get nervous, just picture me naked. Well, I'm looking at you, Kyle. So what happened and what it's like now. I'm not going to spend too much time on what happened. We'd be here all night. And if you're interested, I'll be in the parking lot and I'll share a few stories with a little bit less polish and a few more F-bombs. But I will take you to the end. And you know, it's funny. I thought for a long time my circumstances were what made me an alcoholic, right? And it wasn't until I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with my sponsor that I realized what makes me a real alcoholic is that at some point in my drinking career, I lost control. I can't stop. Or if I can stop and stay stopped for a short period of time, I will inevitably pick up again. And then when I do, and you've heard this before, I take a drink, the drink takes a drink, and the drink takes me. So I'll take you to the end. You know, I can still feel this in my bones. When I'd wake up in the morning and I'd get in the shower, my poor neighbors, I'd be so wrought with, you know, the terror and the frustration, the bewilderment, you know, the fear. I was riddled with it, right? I would let out this scream, the top of my lungs, as loud as I could. I was in so much pain. I just wanted to stop, and I couldn't. And I knew the moment I got out of the shower, I was going to have a drink. I was going to drink all day. I was going to drink through the night, and I'd repeat this cycle over and over again. And I had tried to stop for a long time. I was first introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 22, when alcohol wasn't necessarily my poison of choice. It was intravenous drugs, and that's for a different meeting. But towards the end, you know, I was faced with losing my children. Now, if you ask me at the time, they were being ripped from my arms viciously. I was a victim, right? The world was out to get me. How could they? How could she? And it wasn't until doing an inventory that I realized she did exactly what she was supposed to do. She did the right thing. She was thinking about the children, thinking about her own best interests. That was the move. Looking back, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And it all started with me. We wouldn't have been there in the first place if it wasn't for me and my actions. But it took doing this work to realize that and get to the point where today I call her one of my closest friends. Right? She's an amazing woman. And that was a direct result of doing an inventory, making amends to this woman, and then carrying out the oft-forgotten second part of the 12th step, continuing to be this demonstration of these principles in all my affairs. We have a beautiful relationship today. But that being said, we're in the courtroom, and I'll never forget this. This lives with me. We go through the proceeding, and I'm on the way out the door. I'm opening the door to leave, and the judge stops me. And she says, Mr. Sparks, if you drink again, I will take your kids. I said, absolutely, Your Honor. You have my word. I will not drink. I left that courtroom. I got in my car, I drove home, and I drank. Because don't tell me, just don't drink no matter what, Nate. That's what I do. I drink no matter what. And I would go to this every nighters meeting, and I'd show up drunk. And I was in the parking lot one night, and this curmudgeonly, crusty old timer pulled me aside. And I see a few of you here tonight, and he's talking to me in the parking lot afterwards, and he says, "You know, son, what I'd like you to do, I'd like you to go home and get on your knees and ask for help. And for the first time in your life, don't hope that something's going to change. Believe that it will." In that window of desperation, man, that window that's only open for a short period of time, it was open just long enough. And like our friend, the minister's son in the book, my circumstances had finally made me willing to believe. I was out of moves. I had no other options. I went home. I got on my knees. And I cried. And I said the broken alcoholic prayer. I said, "Please." Passed out in that spot that night. I woke up the next morning. And for the first time in 6 years, I didn't need to drink. Something had shifted. And I ran with it. And I met this tall man in the back of the room. And I said, "Hey, man, I want you to sponsor me." And we set forth on a course of vigorous action. He started reading the book with me. And, you know, I said, "You know, what does it look like to work a third step? What does that look like, right?" And he said, "Well, man, it's real simple. You do a fourth." Okay, I can do that. And, you know, my understanding of the third step has grown exponentially since that moment. But at the time, that's what I needed to hear. I needed it to be that simple. Because I'll get real lost in, like, an existential conversation around, like, what is the third step, man? And, like, what is God? And, like, what does that look like? And what do you mean, turn it over, right? It was simple. It was just do a fourth step. So I start writing. And finally, the time comes to do a fifth step. And we go to meet. And I'm thinking it's going to be like this beautiful moment where we like go to Sunset Cliffs and we like lay on a blanket and hold hands. And like the sun is shining, the birds are chirping, and like I'm going to be free for once, right? And I get into his car and I'm like, "All right, man, I'm ready. Let's do this." And he says, "Yeah, hold on 1 second. We have something to do." I'm like, "What? Like, no, man. Like, this is about me, right? Like, this is my fifth step experience. What are you talking about?" He's like, "No, come on, let's go." He drives me to this, like a recovery home. We pull up outside, and he says, "You know, man, there's this guy in there, and he's dying. He's trying to kick methadone, and he can't. And I can read the book with him, but I can't relate at that level. And you can. So let's go in here, and let's talk to this guy." So we go in, and we start having a conversation. We're in the book, and he starts crying. I'm crying. My sponsor's crying. We're all just crying, right? And I leave, and I'm overwhelmed, man. I felt this like power flowing through. And he grabs his book, and he says, "Yeah, man, we do this so that we can do that." And I realized in that moment, man, it wasn't about me. You know, I had an experience in that moment. It was about my dark past becoming my greatest asset. And with that, I can avert death and misery for countless others. It gets me choked up, man, because there was a long, long period of time where my mother here, they didn't know, right? So we keep moving forward, and I get through the steps, and now I'm sponsoring other men. And then this week comes. This I want to call it like a terrible week, but it was a painful week. So I lose my job. And it's getting rough, you know. And I have court for my kids, like a follow-up hearing for my custody case that week. Go to custody, the custody hearing, I leave. And the very next day, my dad dies. My dad passes away at 8 months sober. It's a lot, right? And my sponsor back there, he tells me, "Yeah, man, you get to be a demonstration, good or bad." So, you know, my father passed away in Paris, and I had to go bring him home. I'm on the plane, and I'm like, how am I going to do this, man? What am I going to do? How do I walk through this, right, with grace? And I had service still. We're on the tarmac, and my phone rings, and it's another alcoholic. And he's locked himself in a hotel room, and he's drinking to die. And he says, I need your fucking help, man. And then again, I'm overwhelmed, this experience, right? I feel this presence, and I hear him say to me, you keep close to me, and you perform my work well. You help the next man, I'll take care of the rest. And that's where my focus has been. It's been on working with the man who's still suffering, who's still sick, the hopeless, the despairing. And, it's a powerful thing. You know, I lived in fear for a long time. And today I can say that I don't live in the fear of the unknown, because I know exactly what I'm here for. And that's a beautiful feeling. You know, for those of you who are new, if I got the life that I wanted when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have been selling myself short. I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous more than I believe in than anything else in my life. It truly works. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan.